This is Business of Home. I'm your host, Dennis Scully. Every week, I'll be talking with leaders and innovators from all corners of the home industry. My guest this week is Steele Marcoux, the editor-in-chief of Veranda. Though the publication has moved from Atlanta to New York and then back to the South in Birmingham, Alabama, it's never lost sight of a graceful take on traditional design. The top editor since 2018, Steele is now overseeing a redesign to celebrate Veranda's 35th anniversary. I spoke with Steele about the magazine's unique audience, the challenge of getting designers to wait to be published, and why, in the midst of a digital media revolution, Veranda is betting on print. This podcast is sponsored by Hartman and Forbes. For 25 years, Hartman and Forbes has delighted the design community by handcrafting the industry's most diverse selection of bespoke natural window and wall coverings. Using only sustainable fibers woven by hand on traditional wooden looms, Hartman and Forbes offers a truly custom product in seamless widths up to 180 inches. Visit HartmanForbes.com to find a Hartman and Forbes luxury showroom near you. This podcast is also sponsored by Tebow. Established in 1886, Tebow is the oldest wallpaper company in the United States. Over its storied history, Tebow has evolved into a full-service design house with a diverse offering of beautifully relevant wallpaper, fabric, trimmings, and furniture. Known for its exceptional designs and inspiring color palettes, the company prides itself on exclusive artwork created by its in-house design team and best-in-class service with high inventory levels. Tebow is to the trade only, sold in thousands of locations around the globe with 4 flagship showrooms in the U.S. To learn more, visit TebowDesign.com. And now, on with the show. So, Steele, we're mere weeks away from the debut of a brand new Veranda. It's the magazine's 35th anniversary, and you're unveiling a bigger, meaningfully bigger version of Veranda. It's got a larger trim size, more pages, the works. But let's explain to the audience what has led up to this. It sounds like a conversation at Hearst has been going on for some time, yes?
Yes.
So, tell us about it.
Yes, this has been in the works for quite a while. We were very lucky to be kind of hand selected last year for a pilot program at Hearst to kind of, you know, look into making a bit of an additional investment into print of all platforms, of all media. And, you know, the case was sort of made that Veranda, in light of its audience, frankly, which is quite affluent and very loyal, was the right brand at Hearst to start with, which was a really kind of a unique position for us to be in and an exciting one for sure. So we actually spent a number of months, 4 or 5 months last year, developing a prototype, not all too dissimilar to this. There are actually some stories that we put together and you know, all the way towards near completion last summer, and then presented it to first our president last summer and then our board last fall to get final approval. And here we are.
And so the conversation, and I remember reading about the pilot program,
yes,
and Hearst wanting to lean more into some of the print publications, and Hearst has always felt very strongly about print,
yes,
and wants to say to the marketplace, no, we still believe that there is a place for print, and we will show you with this.
See?
Right? Yes. So tell me the conversations that they had with you, because it seems as though there's going to be a 40% increase in pages, yes, if I recall.
And yes.
I mean, it's quite an aggressive... quite an aggressive expansion plan.
Yeah. And what was great about it, and to give credit where credit was due, I have to say, Lucy Kalin, our vice president of print, which is a new role as of 2021, gave us a lot of creative license, she said, and freedom, I should say. But she kind of came to us and said, look, what would you do if we were going to actually focus a bit more on print and invest in it? How would you reinvent the product to become a more immersive experience for your reader? And it came down to pages, frankly, first and foremost. This issue, which has a total of 202 pages, is our largest issue since 2008, which is wild. But in terms of editorial page count, the number that we're working with kind of on a go-forward basis is 40% more than where we were prior to this new issue. Furthermore, we decided that we needed a bigger trim size. And so we have added half an inch to our trim size. So when you have a full spread, you're getting actually an inch more of width on either side or, you know, total. And then finally, the other sort of change that we decided we wanted to make was to reorganize the magazine into four sections. What you won't see in this new edition are really choppy pages where we've got like three headlines on one page and we're trying to cover 20 ideas and five pages and that sort of thing. So that took a little re-engineering of how the magazine is set up.
I have in my hand, for listeners at home, I have the January-February issue of Veranda.
Right.
And it is literally half the size.
Literally. Maybe less than half the size.
Well, I mean, it's 98 pages.
Yeah, there you
go. And right, and the new issue is 200 pages. But, and again, we're going to talk lots of inside baseball stuff here, so forgive us. But so often in the day, one would measure the health and vitality of a print publication by the number of spread ads that would be in the front of the book before you would come to the first single page ad or the first bit of edit. And in this new issue, there are 13 spreads before you get to the first single page.
Someone in our office said, it feels like, you know, the September issue of Vogue from 2004.
Exactly. It feels like a time capsule.
Yeah.
It feels like you've gone back in time and where print was thriving and where all of these advertisers, and again, congratulations to David Hamilton and his team of sellers who got all these, right, who got all of these spreads to come in and great. But everything looks better as a spread.
It does.
An ad looks better as a spread.
An ad,
a story.
A picture of a room. A picture of new product. It all looks better as a spread.
It all looks better as a spread. So it's fascinating in a time where all of this seems so counterintuitive to the trends. And as we were saying, the investment, particularly today. And so I was reminded recently at High Point, I actually cut my teeth in my youth in this industry as the production manager of a classical music magazine. And my job was to lower the production cost by finding ways for us to use less paper and have fewer pages.
Paper is expensive, particularly today.
So paper is wildly expensive.
Yes.
And every part of printing a magazine is expensive. And you've just made the issues larger. You've just doubled the number of pages. So this is an enormous investment that Hearst is. It's not just, oh, let's try this out.
Sure.
And right?
Yeah.
This is really, I mean, I can't even imagine how much the print run has increased. And I don't even want to think about it. The new publication, and I gather, is going to be $9.99
as opposed to $6.99. Yeah.
Right. And I noticed that El Decor and House Beautiful, I think, have paywalls now on their website. Is that something that's also coming for Veranda, or how are you think about that?
We're thinking about that. We're not quite there yet. Our website is a bit smaller than those two sister titles. And so we're still sort of recalibrating our digital strategy, but that is something that is on our minds and we're watching and sort of considering what the right approach should be for Veranda there.
Who do you believe your reader to be? And I ask that in part because—
A great question.
Having been working for magazines in the past, there's all of this research. I think in your media kit, there's three different research studies that are done.
Right, sure.
Right? There's lots of different numbers. So who, as editor-in-chief, who do you believe you are speaking to and writing to and delivering your magazine to?
I'm so glad you asked. I do look at the numbers, and most often the numbers validate my instinct, but I am guided more by instinct than the numbers, which, you know, for your listeners, I hope that doesn't alarm anyone, but that is, as an editor, that really is kind of what you're tasked with doing. But Our audience, our reader, first of all, there's a saying at Hearst that is, picture your reader, and it's not, you know, it isn't these numbers. It's one person, as in you need to see her, you need to visualize her, you need to know everything about her, and that is who you are sort of curating content for. And so in the person that I see is very much, I call her a design enthusiast. She may be an interior designer. She may have quite a roster of clients, but she is not necessarily one of the biggest names you've ever heard of. And instead, she is truly obsessed with interior design. And actually, I should say, what complicates the practice at Hearst of picturing this one reader is that Veranda has a nearly 50-50 split between male and female. So I actually have to think of two readers. But these are truly, again, I like to call them design enthusiasts. And they may or may not be in the trade, but they don't have to be. They're not necessarily, but they are more than simply a consumer who hires someone and isn't really engaged with the process. They are actually very engaged. They're following designers on Instagram, you know, and they're probably, possibly even going to markets at times to shop with their designer. You know, they're very, very engaged with the field and kind of obsessed.
Right. And they feel very much part of this world.
Yes.
And the assumption that many advertisers made about Veranda is that your reader loves to decorate. Your reader loves to have people over for dinner and show off their beautiful home.
Yes.
Or set a beautiful table, right? There was this belief that your reader especially,
yes,
lived in this magical place where so many of these companies that are trying to reach this very person that you're describing.
Our reader does, indeed. I mean, I think I will also like to say her living room is nearly an extension of herself. I mean, it is as reflective of her as, you know, her wardrobe is. And that's how she, you know, thinks about her home, and entertaining is absolutely very important to her because she wants to bring other people into that house and allow them to experience it as well and kind of get to know her through the way that she has designed and decorated her home.
Yeah, it always seemed as if I feel like this whole show is pretty much inside baseball.
Right, I know. Well, we're talking about
jargon.
New magazine product.
You had the strength of these high household income numbers to build on.
That's right.
A very compelling foundation and great to be able to go out into the marketplace and say that your reader is highly educated, lots of graduated college, right? They're well traveled, they've got multiple homes. Exactly. And so it makes a lot of sense why this was a magazine worth taking this large investment flight on, because it seems like there's a lot behind it.
Yeah. Interestingly, this came up many months ago, in fact, even at the very beginning of this. But the other compelling thing for Veranda as compared to lots of other titles out there, and certainly at Hearst, is we actually know who our reader is. I mean, you know, sometimes certain brands, because they perhaps are always pursuing new subscribers and there's more churn, you know, it's harder to really pin that down. For us, we have these extremely loyal folks who renew. So we really do know who they are. We really do know how they're living. That sounds a little creepy, but you know.
We know exactly where they are, in fact, and we monitor their activity regularly.
And I will say, I know that sounds super weird and creepy, but I will say, and, you know, I'm not even giving you the chance to ask me this question, but I also think that it helps that the brand, the editorial team, is not based in New York. And this has obviously been, you know, the brand was relocated about 4 years ago from New York to Birmingham. Being in Birmingham, and which the way to describe that is almost more important to say outside of New York than in Birmingham, we are living a life that is much closer to that of our audience, our reader, because we live in houses, we drive cars, we have people over for dinner. Not to say that doesn't happen in New York, but you know, we live a lifestyle that is much more similar to where our audience is, which is in Atlanta, which is in Dallas, which is in Los Angeles, you know, and those kind of metropolitan areas. And I think that is really important to us having a sense of, I know who my reader is, I know how she lives, and I know what she wants.
Well, your question jumps right into exactly where I was going next, which is you arrive on the scene. So you are appointed editor-in-chief of Veranda. Oh, and guess what? Pack your bags because you're going to Birmingham, right? So, I mean, it all happened at the same time. So take us back to that time.
Sure. Well, and so I was actually already based in Birmingham, which made things personally, you know, a little easier for me. But I was working for Hearst for another title based in Birmingham, Country Living. You know, I was sort of given this opportunity to apply for this job after Clint, who is a longtime friend of mine from the editorial world. He and I both have lived in Atlanta at various points of our lives.
Clint Smith, who's the former editor-in-chief of Magnet Magazine, just for listeners. Yes.
But he stepped down and I was sort of asked to apply. And I thought, well, this will be interesting. And I didn't know that the job would end up being relocated to Birmingham. At the time, it was sort of obviously based in New York, and that was that. And I went through the process, and it's honestly like any job application process. You kind of know as you're going through it, at least if you're a good enough fit, because if you like the process, then maybe you decide that you want the job even more. That's what happened to me with Veranda. As I went through the interview process, I was kind of more and more convinced, oh, I really do want to do this job. Again, not really thinking about where it was based. And in the end, they decided to relocate the brand to Birmingham, which, you know, is no easy task in terms of finding, because there was a great staff in place, right? And so it's sort of like, wow, there's a great staff. Now I've got to hire new people. We were able to keep one editor on in New York, the lovely and talented Dale Wood, who you've already mentioned. Yeah, finding a new staff, assembling that team, it's almost like relaunching a brand in some ways. I had been through that process a little bit before when Hearst relocated Country Living to Birmingham because I was an early hire for that process. And so I wasn't entirely terrified, but I did have to warn my family that I would, you know, it was going to be pretty intense for a few months. But we were very lucky to recruit and assemble a great team here. And frankly, a very sort of experienced team who could get up and running right away. And another thing that was also very important to me when putting together the team is hiring folks, besides obviously just myself, who could represent the brand out and about, because we are not in New York. So now that means there are times when I need to be back and forth between New York, but we also need to be back and forth between Dallas and Los Angeles and Atlanta, and Nashville's a new emerging market for us, and Charleston and Chicago. It's just on and on and on. And so it's funny because now at the beginning, I was back and forth to New York a lot. And now I hardly get to New York because I'm doing all these other things. And even our own sales team will say, I'll say, well, I'd love to do that with that client. What if we do it in New York? And they'll say, no. We need you in Chicago. We need you in Dallas because we can cover New York. So, which is true in some ways. And it has evolved that way kind of naturally. But yeah, it's been an interesting 4 years with a pandemic right in the middle of it.
right, exactly. Well, so in the beginning, what was Hearst's rationale for wanting to,
You know, they had a base of operations here. And I think that they had been looking at the mix of titles, and, you know, it was very clear to me from having worked for Hearst, but not for Veranda, that they were interested in moving other titles here at some point. It was sort of a matter of figuring out which one or ones might make the most sense. And when you think about it, Veranda really does make a lot of sense because, again, while New York is an important market for us in terms of readership, by and large, you know, our core concentrations are really, Kate Kelly Smith, our a longtime former publisher, used to call it the smile region, you know, sort of Atlanta to LA, the smile. And so it, in a lot of ways, it does make sense. We also do kind of lean into regionalism of design. Like, we celebrate Southern design, but we also celebrate California design and kind of lean into what is that and explore that. We also celebrate and lean into European design. So again, we have the freedom to exist outside of New York. And I think that kind of is part of what they were thinking. There are obviously some pragmatic concerns as well. We're a smaller staff, so it's fewer jobs to relocate, right? We're published six times a year. So there are fewer sort of production cycles that might go awry in a relocation. So, I mean, I know that have obviously factored in as well. But, and then I should also say, how could I overlook this? We were launched out of Atlanta. So we do have kind of a long-term, you know, tie with and base of operations and sort of, you know, long-term loyal readers and that sort of thing in the Southeast.
Absolutely. And as you and I have talked about in the past, you have the luxury of, if people want to think of you as a Southern book, you can say, well, yes, we are very strong in those territories. And if other people want more cosmopolitan, well, as a matter of fact, New York and LA are two of our strongest marks. So, I mean, right, you can give the people what they want.
Yes.
And as you've pointed out, so this incredible loyal readership, I mean, Lisa Newsome, some might have thought this woman was running a cult. These people were so loyal to her, right? For so long. Speak to me about the legacy and sort of the origin of all of that, because she was such a powerful figure.
She is a force. I'm so glad you asked. We were really lucky to get to work with her on this issue. So just as a reminder, this is, you know, our inaugural issue in our new format, but it's also a celebration of our 35th anniversary. We asked her to contribute to the issue, and she ended up writing the back page essay as a kind of as told to. I was so lucky to get to work with her on that over many, many conversations. She talked to me a lot about how, yes, when she launched, she was very much wanting to celebrate a sense of Southern design and style. She felt like it was underrepresented, hadn't had its place in the sun quite to the degree that she felt like it might deserve. But that she, you know, fairly quickly learned that she was selling out at some point she decided to put the magazine in airports, right? She thought, okay, well, this is how we're going to grow. We're going to, you know, put the magazine for sale in airports. And the first airport to get in touch with her and say, we're selling out, we can't keep, you know, we want more, please send us more, was LAX. And she thought, oh my God, if we're selling out at LAX, you know, we're a national title. We're not a Southeastern design magazine. And so
we're selling ourselves short.
Right.
Clearly there's greater demand.
Right. And so she, you know, adjusted and obviously kind of reflected that within the pages. And then from LAX, it was Paris. You know, they've started selling at the Ritz in Paris. And and you'll see if you kind of look back at a lot of those, like the first 10 years and beyond, but there are a lot of projects in France. And, you know, she kind of quickly steered the magazine right out of the South, being limited to the South and to this sort of more international look at design, which is, you know, she's such a force. She really is. She had such a vision.
Clearly. And over the years, these sort of household names in our industry were editors at the magazine.
Yes.
And Derek Caponegro was editor-in-chief for a time. And your friend Clint Smith, who we mentioned earlier, was a powerful editor. But tell me a little bit about your path into even being an editor-in-chief of a shelter publication, because I know you have an art history background and right?
So I'm from Atlanta. I went to Williams College and I majored in art history, and I thought that I was going to be an architect. I got there on day one. My mother had said, please do me a favor, just take one art history class. I called her after my first class, said, not only am I going to major in art history, but I think I want to be an architect. You know, I love this. And so I was sort of on that path, and I was a senior in college when 9/11 happened, and it really did affect, as it did for everyone, but it affected a lot of the way I was thinking about the future. And so I thought, you know what, I don't know about school for a minute. I think I'm going to get a job and all that. And the job I ended up being very lucky to get was in journalism. I'm embarrassed to say, no journalism training whatsoever. I had written one article for the college paper, and I think it was probably about sports. I mean, I was not a journalism person at all. But all of a sudden I'm a reporter in Washington, D.C. covering the healthcare industry. And I didn't know this, but there was like an inner wonky side to me. And I got like super into that. And I think a liberal arts background, you know, liberal arts education, plus kind of just discovering I'm a very curious person and perhaps hyper person, because I loved the pace. I loved like going to something, learning about it, figuring it out, and then figuring out how to communicate it for this audience over here.
Self-taught. I love this.
Well, not self-taught. I worked for I will say, I worked for this really amazing company that is now owned by Reed Elsevier. But he kind of had a model in place of hiring students out, or people out of liberal arts colleges and training them. And it worked. I actually met my husband there. Once I'd been there a few years, I had sort of that like kind of, I think my title was assistant managing editor. And so I would meet with the reporters after they were back from all of their meetings and, you know, get with them and figure out what the lead ought to be for their story. And I made all the assignments. I managed the calendar. So I really did sort of learn the working, you know, the way a publication can work. And we published weekly and daily. So we were, you know, the pace was a lot.
So it was constant.
Yeah, it was very fast, which I loved. You know, I loved that. But anyway, what's great about what I'm doing now, because I've been in the sort of design and shelter publishing world now for 17 years, a long, long time. But what's great about it is that it merges my two potential directions of, you know, architecture, very visual design, et cetera. And I wanted to do residential architecture. But yeah, so now I have this great opportunity to, you know, delve into a very visual, you know, topic and have my feet very much in the design world, but to be able to approach it from a journalist and to manage a team of writers and producers and create content and sort of figure out, again, I love to figure out, okay, well, this is what the Instagram audience wants versus this is what the digital audience wants. This is what we want in print. And that creative challenge is really exciting for me. And what we are getting to do at Brand It Now, really and truly, with this.
We're taking a quick break from the show to remind designers about Tebow. If you're an interior designer looking for beautifully relevant wall coverings, fabric, and trimmings with no minimum buy-in and quick shipping, look no further than Tebow. Opening a trade account with Tebow is easy. Visit tebowdesign.com/tradeaccount for more information. And now, back to the show. Getting back to you for a moment in coming into Veranda, sure. And how you were thinking about it in the beginning and changes that you might have wanted to make, and then did this whole redesign allow you to sort of bring together perhaps so many ideas that you were thinking about wanting to do in the future? Were you able to sort of realize many of them with this sweeping redesign?
Yeah, in many ways, yes. You know, one of the things that we used to struggle with, I hope we won't in the future, but we know that our audience and frankly, the people that we feature in the pages live really full lives. So they not just have beautiful homes, but they travel to incredible places. They host fabulous parties. Maybe they collect watches. We've talked about our watch collecting story in this current issue.
Eric Egan, I don't know what you're doing with all these watches, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
online.
Different watches, different locations around the world.
Yes. It's just, you know. Oh my God, am I in Milan? I'm wearing the wrong watch.
Excuse me, I've got to trade this out. But it's true, you know, we know, and I think that is actually something that sets Veranda apart from the other design and decorating magazines is that we are really about kind of beautiful living. We've said that, you know, from the very beginning, that it's not just what your house looks like, it's kind of how your house lives, right? Which involves hosting parties, it involves having a collection, it involves, you know, buying art, it involves travel. And so we often would, you know, have ideas for stories that we just always felt like would be kind of robbing from our house tours. And I think perhaps to the detriment of our pages and the disservice of our readers, at times we tried to have it all. We tried to say, okay, we'll still showcase amazing houses. We'll do them in 4 to 6 pages. And then we'll do this fabulous story about this redesigned hotel in Scotland where you can weave your own tartan, you know, but we'll do that in like 2 pages. And then, and we'll pay for the photo shoot, by the way, we'll send a photographer out, we'll send an editor and we'll commission, you know, a fabulous shoot overseas and then run the pictures this big and da da da. And so now, and then that's just the ideas that we were able to still pursue, but there were so many that got, you know, left on the cutting room floor that now we can say, you know, we still have to be very judicious in terms of what we cover, but we can do right by the ideas that we decide to pursue. And I think that's really important. And in the end, that comes down to delivering a better value and a better service for our reader.
You touched on a subject that I'm particularly interested in, and you and I talked recently about the conversation I had with the photographer Douglas Friedman.
Yes.
And the shift with magazines to some extent in terms of photography, and sometimes using pickup photography, or sometimes if it's shot well enough when someone sends you some shots to look at, right?
Yeah,
so,
it happens.
Some scouting shots, you go, you know what, these look great. We can run with this. Again, because you've got so many more pages, you've got so much more room. Are you thinking differently about photography? Are you thinking you're budgeting more for that? Do you have a wider runway?
We absolutely, in the end, one of the biggest budget asks was to increase our photography budget. We want to shoot more. That's not to say that we won't ever use pickup photography, but we really do want to shoot more. And we know that by having the additional pages, I feel like I'm a little bit of a broken record on this topic, but by having the additional pages and the bigger trim size, we're able to kind of showcase that photography a little better. One of the things that I think, you know, there's when a designer or an architect photographs a house or a project for his or her own portfolio, they're obviously looking for something a little different than what we're looking for. It's close, but it's different. And I think there have been times where we've felt like, you know what, let's go ahead and, you know, the difference wouldn't be so significant. You know, we'll just rely on this. And that was a great budget savings for us. But our preference is always to commission the shoots ourselves. Not only then are we able to control, you know, the floral design, any sort of props. We don't really bring in props, but we do bring in flowers for photo shoots. But we're also, and this is more important than people might realize, other than Douglas, we're able to control the angles a bit more, or work with a photographer that will give us some more interesting and editorial angles. You know, it's one thing to say, I need to show this for my portfolio and I need to show the whole room. And I need to show, you know, that I can design a whole room that's very, very large. Well, that may not be how the human eye experiences a room when it, you know, sees it. And it also may not be what is enough to kind of intrigue the eye to then look for more, which is more what we're doing when it comes to magazine photography. So something that you and I talked about is sort of being in one room, looking into another. There's a mood there. There's a tension there that's a little bit more captivating that may not make it to a shot list for a designer's portfolio, but that's something that we will do. In fact, the meeting I was just in before our conversation was all about, it was an art meeting for a photo shoot where, you know, we are not shooting any overall photos of the rooms. We're looking at moments, looking from here to there, architectural details and those sorts of things. So I think we're aiming to, with this greater investment in photography, marry up our visual storytelling with what we really want to kind of showcase about the house or the project. So in the case of the project I was just referencing, it's really about the architecture as much as it is the interior design and the kind of preservation of this historic project. And so we want to see those details more so even than a finished room. And we're able to kind of commission that and direct it.
And is that also where we get a sense of you personally? Is that also your interest and
probably
background?
So
showing up and saying, you know, some more architectural details. Yeah. Anyone with me? Yeah.
There's a section in the new magazine called Architecture and Decoration. And that's where it will be sort of what you might expect to find in a well, or where you find all the big house tours in a former edition. And yeah, I mean, that is quite personal. I think that, in fact, I asked Lisa about this. I asked her, you know, was architecture important to you? And she said, yes, in the sense that a well-decorated house, you know, you can, it really can't be well-decorated unless the decoration supports the architecture and kind of stems from the architecture. So, but she also said that if she could go back, she would perhaps focus on architects a little bit more. So, you know, and I do think that that's actually another way in which that we are distinguished from some of our competitors is that, you know, again, architecture is a big investment, and that's the kind of these are the kind of houses that our audience is interested in and lives in.
Historically, designers own home issues really strong.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Those are often readers' favorite issues and often the biggest, thickest. Your initial, right, this book with the redesign is designed as autobiography, and it's extraordinary homes that tell a story, including, and I'm wondering how you ultimately decided for Summer Thornton and her beautiful townhouse in Chicago. How did you make the decision to make that the cover story?
It's always a hard decision, I admit.
I'm sure.
It's always a hard decision, and one that we're wrestling with right now for the next issue, July, August. But I will say, while there were several contenders running up to the last minute, our design director, this was his top pick from the beginning. And that by beginning, I mean like, you know, January 2nd when we started working on this issue. And he starts with editing down a you know, document of cover options for me to look at. And he usually sends me like 60. You know, and I go from like 60 to 5 or whatever. But this was the number one in the file. And I was like, yeah, I like it. I think that for me, and this was part of my interview process and, you know, sort of onboarding at Veranda. One of the things that this cover has that I hope will make it successful is a very strong, you know, kind of what we call pull you through out to the outside. You don't really see the outside beyond those windows. But the room is kind of steering you towards it.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, you know, Veranda, an indoor-outdoor transitional space, is our brand name. Exterior covers do very well for us, but living rooms are number one above exteriors. And so a living room that has this sort of dramatic kind of pull through to the exterior, I think, is often a recipe for success for us. I also think that this room has a very strong sense of color, as you can tell, and is a color that we're seeing more and more of these days and kind of predicting will be quite popular. And I also think that this room is much more, even though it is a designer's own living room, it's much more personal and layered and collected than it is decorated, if that makes any sense. And there are bits and pieces throughout the way. Like, this is your final destination when you're looking at it, these windows. But there's a whole journey of bits and pieces that sort of compile and comprise to tell Summer's story, or whosever room this is. You might not know it's Summer's living room when you first see it.
Well, it's such a striking project, and it's a beautiful space, and she leaves no corner undecorated.
She does not.
Ceiling is done.
Yeah, there's interest everywhere. I mean, there's something. Yes. There's like eye candy everywhere.
Yes, and it's a beautiful project inside. One of the things I want to pick up on, and you were just saying, going back to January, making this cover decision. So, a lament from designers that I am sure you hear often is, this print process seems to take so darn long.
It's awful.
And should I submit this project to Steel, or should I just put it up on my Instagram and get going?
Yeah.
And I wonder, what do you say to designers when they come to you with this dilemma, and what can print do to say, hang in there, it's going to be worth it. I know it's months since you've sent us that project, but we're going to get back to you soon. And how do you speak to this issue?
It is very challenging. Let me just say to any designer listening, I apologize, and we're working out our workflow to get you an answer more quickly. One of the best things about our new product is that we were able to hire a few new folks, and we have an amazing woman who is going to streamline this communication for us, spick and span. But yes, I ask for patience for sure. You know, it has been remarkable over the last really 12 to 18 months, but the pace of fabulous projects coming into us has picked up, and I'm thrilled to see that. I'm thrilled for my designer friends and the design community in general to know that work is certainly picking up. And we are very, very lucky to be in a position where we get to look at so many beautiful projects, and there are far too many worthy, beautiful projects out there for us to be able to publish in print. That said, to your question, I do think it's worth it. I do ask designers to wait for us. And I guess I would say, just to talk, never hesitate to check in, nudge. Like, you're not bothering us. This is our jobs. We need to get back to you. We're working on getting back to you more quickly. But also to say that, yes, please do wait to put them on Instagram.
It'll be so worth it.
Let us know. You know, like, I really want to put this on Instagram. I'm trying to make that decision. Let, you know, are you close? Do you think there's a chance? You know, ask us the tough questions. We're not afraid to have a frank conversation. And hearing from you that that's what you're looking for, we will get you a quick decision. Or we will at least say, it's not looking likely, or, you know, it's looking very, very likely, or it's going to, the other thing I hear all the time is not just getting an answer, but okay, how about, yes, you've accepted our project. And now we don't, you know, we thought it was going to publish in this calendar year, but it's just been moved, yes, to the next calendar year.
Exactly. And this is not just a Veranda
issue. No, it's not. Thank you.
Right. This is a print magazine in general. And again, generationally, these newer designers that are coming up in the world, TikTok, they're, yeah, like, I don't have time for some magazine to tell me willy-nilly months from now whether this is happening, not happening, whether I'm good enough or not good enough, whatever.
Right.
And they want to move full speed ahead, and
I get it. Instagram is such a marketing tool for the design community right now. You can't afford not to be showing your work there. The other thing I say to people is, maybe show details. You know, maybe there's ways that you can show a corner, or, you know, even like there's a designer I'm thinking of now who will often show sort of fabric layering, like, here's the sofa and some pillows, and so that someone gets a sense of, okay, you know, they're working, they're putting out new work a lot, but that's not giving so much away that a print reader will feel like, oh, I've already seen this. There's, you know, that you're still not lacking in the kind of surprise and delight. But, you know, I totally get that. I think it's all a matter of communication, and we're doing our very best. And I do feel like it is worth it. This is still, you know, your project still, as we were just talking about, this is the project actually in Birmingham, Alabama, in our hometown. But like, where else are you going to, you're not going to get that kind of mileage in real estate for that beautiful room,
right,
than in a nearly spread image like that. So it is worth it. We do hear from designers all the time that they are getting client referrals from being seen in a magazine, especially a magazine like Veranda, where perhaps our audience is a little bit smaller than some of the other titles out there, but they're so loyal and so engaged that they are actually acting on the content that they see. And these are, they're finding ideas for designers to call.
Harpin and Forbes is proud to work hand in hand with the top names in design to bring you the industry's most diverse collection of hand-woven natural window and wall coverings. Their Spring-Summer 2022 Amy Meyer collection features 7 new woven-to-size grass weave window coverings. Past collaborations include Michael S. Smith, J. Randall Powers, and Max Humphrey. To preview this collection and to register for your trade account, visit hartmanforbes.com.
You were just mentioning so many projects now are coming your way, and really impressive projects.
Yes.
And I talk to a lot of different photographers around the country who tell me that there is just this huge bottleneck of really worthy projects.
Yes.
One of the challenges in the publishing landscape is we're very celebrity driven. I get it. You need a celebrity on your cover to sell newsstand. You need, we all get what it's about, but it has in part led to an even greater bottleneck,
right,
of worthy projects that don't have a famous person attached to them.
Yes.
And therefore they go on a separate track, it seems, with many of the publications. That seems less an issue for you. Yes?
Yeah, it really is. We actually find very often that people want to see these projects without necessarily knowing who lives there, because they're interested in the design and maybe the lifestyle that is happening there, more so than the person, him or herself. perhaps they even want to envision themselves in such an environment. And that has been a successful way for us to operate and to kind of pull stories together. When appropriate, when the homeowner is willing, and certainly in this issue, which is designers own homes, we did show the homeowners and interview them, and they were very much a part of the story. And personally, I love to do that when it feels right. On the other hand, I am definitely aware that many times from our audience, it can feel alienating, and perhaps, you know, they would rather just be able to envision themselves in this incredible space and kind of learn about the design and learn about and be inspired by, you know, ways to put things together and live that kind of life. So yeah, celebrity just hasn't really been as important for us.
One of the other challenges with the celebrity project is that many in the industry feel, well, are you showing this as an example of great work?
Is that the best? Yeah.
Or is it just because it's attached to this person?
Right.
And I wonder how youth in your own vetting process, and again, I'm trying to think of telling designers who might be listening,
right,
how you think about selecting projects, and when they are thinking about submitting things to you, what are you looking for? Is there some criteria?
Sure.
How do you?
I would say, you know, in terms of how to kind of counsel designers about pitching us, extremely high quality is very important to us. Originality, something that we probably haven't seen before and or haven't seen that similar of an idea over and over again, is important. How will a designer know that? Well, that they're just going to have to sort of, you know.
If it has white boucle in it, you know what? I'm just going to stop you right there.
If you're seeing it in a lot of magazines, that's probably not a way to go. But maybe if you have a client who was more interested in taking risks, whatever those risks may be, maybe it has to do with their art collection, maybe it has to do with their use of color or their restraint from color. I mean, whatever might have felt, you know, risky in that process. And projects that, I will say, this may sound contradictory, but projects in which the homeowner was very involved, whether or not the person wants to be anonymous, that's fine. But I think that we are more likely, the projects where there was a high degree of collaboration between the owner and the designer is probably going to resonate with us more strongly. By definition, is going to be more original, right? Or will be original because it will reflect that homeowner, even if we're not going to actually get to know the homeowner by name or by photo in the story. That's not a problem. And then, you know, other things we always ask about exterior or connection to outdoors. That's not to say we don't publish apartments that have not even a balcony, but it's something that we ask about. And we do ask how the owner lives in the house. You know, do they use it for entertaining? Is this where they pursue some sort of personal pastime or hobby? We want to know about those kinds of things.
And your argument, as you were making earlier, about why it's worth waiting for it to appear in the magazine is, wait till you see a spread in our new giant magazine.
Yes, that. And I promise you'll get a call. You'll get a call from a prospective client, and hopefully not just any old client, but a client that wants to take risks and have a little fun and, you know, a budget to follow.
Well, and wrapping this up, in thinking about what we want to tell the industry,
yes,
about a very significant print publication in our industry is feeling so expansive right now, right?
Yes.
Right? Yep. That it has literally expanded in size, in pages.
Ambition.
Yes, exactly. So tell us what you think the message of all of this is for the industry. What should people take away from what's happening at Veranda?
If I may say so, I think this is the future of print. I really do. I think it's certainly—
What specifically?
This kind of format. This number of pages, this kind of immersive layout, this kind of, you know, very curated towards a theme rather than a seasonal flash in the pan. I believe that this is, at least for luxury print publications, this is the future.
And that the advertising support will come.
Yes, we are seeing that with this issue. And it's not even a but, it's an and. And our economics are set up that, you know, we have quite a solid foundation of consumer support to begin with. And so to see the consumer support really is actually what is probably most appealing to our advertisers, second only to the fact that their ads look beautiful in those spreads and on this high, you know, high quality paper. But that a strong sort of consumer support foundation paves the way, and the advertisers will come. They were excited to hear about this project. They were excited to hear about these changes, and they were excited to hear that we were focusing on print again. Not to say that we're not focusing on our website and our social platforms, but that instead of do everything with less, it's kind of a do each thing the best way that you possibly can.
And this is, to that point, this is how a luxury print magazine should present itself.
Yes.
Confident, thick,
yes,
heavy, competing with the coffee table book,
that's
as
right,
we referred to, right?
Yeah. Not disposable. There's nothing disposable here. There's
no.
There are not, you know, 600 cover lines fighting for your attention. There's one big idea and 202 pages of, you know, celebrating that idea.
of glorious content. And now David Hamilton and team just have to continue
they
to deliver
to keep it up
on those numbers.
That's right.
Yes. Yes. But it seems, so we're all speculating right now about where we are in this home boom cycle.
Sure.
And everyone's hoping we have years to go, though some nervousness, perhaps some little skittishness at High Point, I don't know. But you're also positioned in all of those key markets that we talked about earlier that have expanded dramatically during the past few years.
Yes.
Who would have predicted that COVID would cause quite so much movement around the country and that so many people would move from northeastern climates to southern
climates? I know. Well,
climates.
Or we say Dallas is the new California.
Yes.
It's crazy.
And I wonder how you think about that when you're thinking about future projects and how you want the book to speak to these markets. They seem like they are much larger and much more important markets than they were even just a few years ago.
Yeah, we feel grateful that we have a strong sort of foundation in those markets. Dallas in particular is very important to us, both from a consumer standpoint as well as an advertiser standpoint. And I think that it not only factors into what kind of content we want to curate for the magazine itself, but it also speaks to where and how we will bring the magazine to life with events. And you will certainly see us focusing on those markets, whether they're advertiser events, you know, showroom events that we do, or even consumer events on a smaller scale, bringing consumers together. We actually did our first event in Nashville, first consumer event in Nashville, sort of coupled with the Nashville Antiques and Garden Show in February. And it was a huge success and a place where I knew there was great expansion, but hadn't had an opportunity yet to really kind of like delve in and get to know that market. And man, I came home super energized about the folks in Nashville and what's happening there.
Bunny Williams told me she could not get over that crowd.
It was amazing. It was amazing. And I mean, yeah. Bunny, you know, Bunny reigns wherever she goes, but particularly in Nashville. But it was amazing. I kid you not, I referenced this in a digital article I wrote recently for our website, but the opening of the doors to the antique show was like supermarket sweep style. No joke. I mean, people were queued. They opened the doors. People were running. You know, it was on fire. It was on fire.
I mean, Buddy said you couldn't believe the garden enthusiasts.
It was that amazing.
I mean, they were, yeah. Well, which is so exciting. And it's fun to be able to think about events again. And it's fun to think about doing so much of this in person and to sort of bring the brand to life in different marketplaces. And it's exciting to think about being able to do that. When does this issue come out into the world? When will listeners get to see, touch, flip through the 202 pages?
Our newsstand date is April 26th. That said, we will break the cover on our Instagram feed on April 21st, which is our digital on sale. So folks who subscribe digitally will be seeing it then. And you know what's funny to me, Dennis, is there's April 21st, and then there's the newsstand date of April 26th. In between there, I get all kinds of messages. I just got my issue and I loved it. I saw something on Instagram and I haven't gotten my issue. Where's my issue? You know, and my own mother tells me, I think she doesn't get her issue until 2 weeks later. It's just sort of, unfortunately, a bit all over the map. But somewhere between April 21st and April 26th is when you can find it on newsstands or in your mailbox. And you can subscribe at veranda.com.
And hurry, yes. If you subscribe right now.
That's right.
Right? This will be your first issue.
I'm
never sure how that works.
Yeah, I'm never sure how that works. But we can get you, if you subscribe now and you want this first issue, we will get it to you. We will find a way to get it to you.
Yeah. It definitely seems like an issue that people are going to want to hold on to for a long time. So congratulations on that. This is an incredibly exciting time for you and the team. And I hope that the market meets the issue and you with a great response, and that this is the future, that print is coming back, and you and Veranda are going to lead it there.
Well, thank you very much. We're grateful for the opportunity, and I am personally grateful to work with an incredibly talented team and to have the support of Hearst, and just grateful to have the opportunity to talk to your audience.
Well, we're delighted to have you, and thank you so much for making the time.
Sure.
I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to keep up with the latest design industry news, visit us online at businessofhome.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, browse job listings, and join our BOH Insider community for access to online workshops, a free print subscription, and much more. If you have a note for the podcast, drop us a line at podcast@businessofhome.com. If you're enjoying these conversations, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps others to discover the show. This show was produced by Fred Nikolaus and Caroline Burke, and edited by Michael Castaneda. I'm Dennis Scully. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.